translation. At Kumbhakarna Kapala, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw a great lake and then the holy place named Shiva Kshetra, where a temple of Lord Shiva is located, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kumbhakarna is the name of the brother of Ravan. At present moment, the city of Kumbhakarna Kapala is known as Kumbakonam. It is situated 4 miles northeast of the city of Tanjore. There are 12 temples of Lord Shiva located in Kumbakonam, as well as 4 Vishnu temples and 1 temple of Lord Brahma. Shiva Kshetra within the city of Tanjore is situated near a big lake known as Shiva Ganga. At this place is a large temple of Lord Shiva known as Bratishwar Shiva Mandir. There are a few other verses that are preceding this. I'll quickly read those and then we can begin discussions. Go samaje Shiva deki aila vedavane Mahadeva deki tanra karila vandana. The Lord then visited a place known as Go Samaj, where he saw Lord Shiva's temple. He then arrived at Vedavana, where he saw another deity of Lord Shiva and offered him prayers. Go Samaj is a place of pilgrimage for the devotees of Lord Shiva. It is very important and it is located near Vedavana. Amritalinga Shiva deki vandana karila Sabha Shivalaya Shaiva Vaishnava Hoila. Seeing the Shiva deity named Amritalinga, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered his obeisances. Thus he visited all the temples of Lord Shiva and converted the devotees of Lord Shiva into Vaishnavas. Devastane Asi Kaila Vishnu Darshana Shri Vaishnavera Sange Taha Goshti Anushana. At Devastana, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Lord Vishnu and there he talked with the Vaishnavas in the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya. These Vaishnavas are known as Sri Vaishnavas. Hare Krishna. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamahami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna. Very honored and grateful to be here at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. And very, very grateful for this opportunity to serve all of you all by sharing some thoughts from the Chaitanya Charitamrita today. This series of verses that we have been seeing in the Chaitanya Charitamrita are the part of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's South India tour, the very famous South Indian tour of Lord Chaitanya. And the many, many aspects that are beautiful about the South Indian tour of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of all the most amazing aspects of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tour in South India, I want to focus on two things. One is his interactions with Sri Vaishnava Acharyas. So I'm going to focus a little bit on understanding the mood of the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, which is one of the very primary foundations of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. There are some things that he picked up from every sampradaya. And one of the things that he picked up from Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is Vaishnava dealings. And, you know, since we are discussing Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is primarily a book of Vaishnava dealings, I thought it will be apt that I speak a little bit on the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya and the understanding of Vaishnava dealings from it that we can learn. And also, since Lord Shiva is mentioned so many times in these verses and purports, I'll speak a little bit on Lord Shiva and one understanding of Lord Shiva that I personally feel that as devotees we should imbibe, we should learn from, and we should really understand. So that's what we'll be doing today. Seeking blessings from all of you so that I can speak something valuable and glorification of Lord, of Chaitanya Charitamrita and for my purification. I'll begin with a little analysis of Lord Shiva and his pastimes. That will build the foundation of what we're going to discuss today. Lord Shiva is an amazing personality. And there are so many things that we can learn from Lord Shiva. Vaishnava naam yatha shambho. So I would like to focus on one aspect of Lord Shiva, which is a little strange aspect, which is Lord Shiva's head-cutting spree. So I don't know how many of you all know, Lord Shiva has been cutting a lot of heads, you know. He cut the head of Lord Ganesh, and then he also cut the head of Daksha, and then he also cuts the head of Brahmaji. So if you study all these pastimes of Lord Shiva cutting people's heads, you might be wondering, what's wrong with him, you know? Why is he cutting everybody's head randomly, you know? So now, you know, analyzing these three stories of Lord Shiva cutting people's heads, I'm going to be speaking about what really Lord Shiva represents and why does he cut people's heads. The head represents intelligence, isn't it? The head is a seat of intelligence. And the heart is a seat of faith. Lord Shiva is Vishwasmurti. He is the abode of faith. He is the abode of faith in the Supreme Lord. So Lord Shiva intensely is meditating all his life. What is he meditating on? He's meditating on the holy names of Lord Ram. He's meditating on his worshipable deity in his heart. So his life is filled with Vishwas. His life is filled with faith. But when we look at the three heads that he cuts, the three heads that he cuts are heads of people who have a lot of intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita, we hear this very beautiful shloka where Krishna is saying, Aham sarvasa prabho mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So the word samanvitaha means combination of what? Buddha, which means buddhi, intelligence, and bhava, which means emotions. So bhakti is a combination of these two things, buddha, buddhi, and intelligence, and bhava, which is emotions, which can also be called as faith, can also be called as vishwas, like that. So ideally, we're supposed to practice spiritual life in a combination of these two things, intelligence and faith. A lot of us, the reason we are not able to practice bhakti nicely is because we are filled with intelligence. And for a lot of people who are very intelligent, practicing bhakti is not easy, isn't it? Because intelligence is not only a source of knowledge, right, absorption, analysis, but is also the source of doubts. If you have too much intelligence, you'll get too many doubts. If you have very little intelligence, life is good. Bhakti is very easy to practice, you know. It's just a matter of faith, you know. So, Lord Shiva, he is Vishwas Murti, but when he sees that there is too much intelligence, he decreases intelligence a little bit. Lord Brahma, who is a very intelligent person, just to help you understand how intelligent he is, all of us are made of many elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Brahma is made up of only one element, and that is intelligence. He doesn't have any other element. Imagine how intelligent he is, you know. And on top of that, he has four heads, you know. Or rather, he had five heads at one point, you know. So, super intelligent person. There is one problem with intelligence, is that when somebody is very intelligent, they get attached to what they create. Lord Brahma, at once, he created a very beautiful girl. And he was so mesmerized by that girl, he started running after that girl. Lord Shiva, he said, this is not right. He cut off one of the heads of Brahma. So Brahma had five heads originally, and then it decreased to four heads after that. So why did Lord Shiva cut off the head of Brahma? Because this is the first problem with intelligence. The first problem with intelligence is that when someone uses intelligence and becomes very creative, they tend to get attached to their creation. Like you ask an author, you give a feedback to an author, that's it. They get wild. They just can't handle feedback, you know. You give feedback to a painter, to an artist. They can't handle it, you know. Even if that painting makes no sense, you know. If you give feedback to a sculptor, they just can't handle it. And to make things a little more relevant, if you give feedback to a person who has coded a program, you know, they can't handle it, you know. So basically, anyone who is very intelligent is very creative and they become attached to their creation. And Lord Shiva, he found this as the first defect in intelligence. He cut off Brahma's head to decrease his intelligence a little bit. And then the son of Brahma is Daksha, Daksha Prajapati. The word Daksha itself means expert. So Daksha was very expert in whatever he did. And the problem with expertise is that with expertise comes pride. This is the second problem with intelligence. So somebody who is very intelligent tends to become very expert, and somebody who is very expert tends to become proud of what he is expert in. So Daksha was really, really powerful. And the moment he entered into the yajna, there was a massive yajna in which practically all the gods in the universe were there. All the biggest of biggest people were there. Everyone in the yajna stood up as soon as Daksha made his entry. And as soon as everyone got up, it gave Daksha a sense of pride. There were only two people that didn't get up. One was Lord Brahma, obviously father of Daksha. He said, you know, I don't need to get up. And second was Lord Shiva. Daksha had a lot of problem with that because Shiva was his son-in-law. He's secondary, he's like the destroyer of the universe. All that doesn't matter to him. What matters is son-in-law. You may be everything outside, but in the house, you're a son-in-law, you know. So Daksha couldn't handle the fact that his son-in-law didn't stand up. And Daksha was furious, started speaking all kinds of obnoxious things, you know, about Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva, through his people, cut off Daksha's head. So when Daksha's head was cut off, all the gods, they ran to Lord Shiva and they said, what is this? This is such a pure yajna going on. How come bloodshed happened? It's not good. Lord Shiva said, actually, now the yajna is complete by cutting off his fellow's head. So the gods were wondering, what does he mean? Why is he saying? He said, whenever you do yajna, whenever any sacrifice happens, the sacrifice ends with something known as Purnahuti. It's like the last oblations put into the fire. And typically, in any sacrifice, the last oblations you put into the fire is the thought that I did it. That's when the sacrifice is complete. So when you give any charity, when you do any kind of sacrifice in your life, when you throw that thought that I did it into the fire, that's when the sacrifice is complete. So Lord Shiva said, by cutting off this fellow's head, we offered the false ego into the fire. And now the yajna is complete. So the God said, fine, the yajna is complete, but we need him, you know, please revive him. Lord Shiva said, fine. He brought the head of a goat and fitted it in. And imagine Daksha seeing himself in the mirror, you know. Not exactly the most beautiful scene to see, isn't it? So his pride decreased a little bit. So his intelligence, you know, goat's brain, how much it is, you know. Very less intelligence can be fitted in, right? So his pride decreased a little bit, his intelligence decreased a little bit, and his faith increased a little bit. Imagine fitting a goat's head on a human head and it's talking and walking around, and it's amazing, isn't it? The third person, Lord Shiva cut off his head, Lord Ganesh. So, you know, Shiva had gone once for meditation and he returned back home. There was a boy standing there, Parvati Devi, with the chandan from her own body, she created Lord Ganesh. And she told this boy, you stand on the door, I'm going to have a bath and come. So Lord Shiva came in. Lord Ganesh, so he wanted to enter his, you know, his own house. Ganesh said, who are you? Your name is not on the list. Parvati had given him a good list of people who can come in, you know. Obviously, she didn't give Shiva's name, it's his own, it's you know, the owner of the house, you don't have to give the name, right? So it was a guest list. So Ganesh, he followed, you know, rules as it is. And he said, you can't come in. Lord Shiva said, this boy seems to be too intelligent. And he doesn't have faith in me. And he cut off Ganesh's head. So, interestingly, Brahma's son is Daksha. Daksha's daughter is Sati. The same Sati comes as Parvati. So she is also a very intelligent person, you know. And the creation of Parvati is also Ganesh, who is also super intelligent, you know. So when Parvati came back, she asked him, why did you kill my son? Lord Shiva said, I always thought father and mother come together and produce a son. Where is my contribution in this son, you know? Parvati said, nothing doing, get him back to life now, you know. And then Lord Shiva put the head of an elephant and revived Lord Ganesh. So the head of the elephant, that represents faith, which is Lord Shiva's contribution. And the remaining part of Ganesh's body is Parvati's contribution, which is intelligence, you know. And the combination of these two is Lord Ganesh, who is Bhakti Vigna Vinashak, you know, the combination of intelligence and faith. So if you study these three episodes, we understand one very important thing. For us to practice our spiritual life nicely, it has to be the combination of these two. A lot of times, many, if you look at many other organizations around the world, many people who are practicing spirituality around the world, they keep their faith ahead and they keep their intelligence behind in the beginning of their spiritual lives. When you keep your faith ahead and intelligence behind, you end up with bad experiences. You know, you get people who are literally, you know, just tricking you. And then the other way around, you put your intelligence ahead and put your faith behind, you know, which is where you come to a place like ISKCON. They first appeal to you intelligently. Logic, philosophy, knowledge is very systematically given. But at the same time, we are also taught that only intelligence is not going to solve your problems in life. Only intelligence is not going to help you connect with God. Along with intelligence, you also need to bring in faith. And the interesting thing about spirituality is that many, many times we come across problems in life that intelligence cannot solve. Whenever you come across problems in life that intelligence cannot solve, that is the time to bring faith ahead and put intelligence in the back seat of your life, you know. So this combination is what is called devotion. And now I'm going to share with you some very interesting stories from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya that talk about what this faith is. Talk about what kind of faith and what kind of intelligence and what kind of understanding that bhakti should be practiced with. And these stories are so heart-touching, so beautiful, and so profound in their, you know, in their depth. There was once Ramanujacharya, who was the head of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, as mentioned here. Ramanujacharya, he was wanting to go to Tirupati to visit, have darshan of Balaji. So, Ramanujacharya, if you understand, he is Lakshman himself. He is Anantashesh. You know, he's an incarnation of Anantashesh. And Ramanujacharya did not want to climb the Tirupati hill because he felt it is so holy and he felt it is the body of Anantashesh. You know, the hill is Anantashesh personified on the head of which Balaji is sitting. So Ramanacharya did not want to climb the hill, but at the same time he wanted to go up. So what would he do? He climbed on his knees. Imagine, in those days, you know, for any of you who have gone to Tirupati or heard of Tirupati, now there are roadways and all that. In those days, there was just forest. Imagine climbing a hill on your knees. Excruciatingly painful. And for those 2-3 days that he stayed on top, he didn't eat, he didn't drink, because he didn't want to use a washroom there on top. So imagine Ramanacharya. So Ramanacharya was climbing up this hill, and while he was climbing up this hill, there was a great Vaishnav whose name was Sri Shailapurna. He was one of the gurus of Ramanacharya. So Ramanacharya had several gurus, one of whom was Sri Shailapurna. From Sri Shailapurna, Ramanacharya spent 1 year with him learning the Ramayana in 64 different ways. You know, Sri Shailapurna taught Ramanacharya. So when Ramanuja was walking up the hill on his knees, at some point midway, Sri Shailapurna came running and he brought with him Mahaprasad from Tirupati Balaji. Ramanacharya asked Sri Shailapurna a question. Very interesting question. And the answer of Sri Shailapurna is even more interesting. Ramanacharya asked him, "My dear Guru, you know, my dear Master, why did you come yourself getting prasad for me? Why didn't you send some smaller devotee, you know, some younger devotee, some newer devotee, you know, to get prasad for me?" Sri Shailapurna said, yes, I wanted to send some, you know, neophyte devotee to get prasad for you. I searched all over. I couldn't find anyone more neophyte than me. So I only ended up coming, you know. This is Sri Vaishnavism. This is the mood of what it really means to be a devotee. Many times, this term Vaishnav is not exactly understood much clearly. You know, I mean, externally, yes, we understand Vaishnav means somebody who worships Vishnu. But internally, what it really means to be a Vaishnav is something that we need to understand more deeply. One time, one devotee went to Parashar Bhatta, another exalted Sri Vaishnava. So he came to Parashar Bhatta and he asked him that, "Can you please tell me who is a Vaishnav?" So Parashar Bhatta told him, "See, if you want to know answer to this question, who is a Vaishnav, you go to Tirupati Hills and there you meet a devotee named Anantacharya. He will tell you who is a Vaishnav." You know, obviously in those days there were no Zoom classes. You know, you could do a Zoom call with Anantacharya and, you know, figure it out. So he had to actually go there. So he took him 6 months to reach Tirupati Hills and to meet Anantacharya. I mean, you know, you have to really walk down all the way, you know. So he spent a lot of time, so much trouble reaching Anantacharya. So when he reached there, Anantacharya was serving prasad to a lot of people. So people were standing in lines, you know, sitting in lines, and Anantacharya was coordinating the prasad seva. And this man, you know, comes to Anantacharya and asks him, "Parashar Bhatta, he told me to meet you. I want to know who is a Vaishnav." So this person told Anantacharya like this, that, "I want to, you know who is a Vaishnav." Anantacharya told him, "Just wait, I'll tell you." He continued serving prasad. First batch got over. He didn't invite him to sit. I mean, naturally, if you come from so far, you want to sit and eat prasad, right? Generally, whoever gets prasad in first row or first serving is considered very lucky. Because second serving onwards, items start disappearing, you know. So naturally this devotee was seeing, "Are, this item is getting over." So Anantacharya didn't call him to sit for prasad. Second row, you know, many devotees came and ate and went away. Anantacharya still didn't call him. And this person is just standing there looking at everybody eat prasad, you know. He's wondering when my turn will come. Then after 3 or 4 turns, they called him. They made him eat prasad. And then he went and asked Anantacharya, "Can you please tell me who is a Vaishnav?" Anantacharya told him, "Come tomorrow, I'll tell you." This fellow went away. Next day he came. And again asked Anantacharya, can you please tell me, you know, who is the Vaishnava? He said, just wait, prasad serving is going on. Again, the same thing repeated, you know. He was not allowed to sit in the first row. He was not allowed to sit in the second, batch. He was not allowed to sit in the third batch. And then finally he was fed prasad and he went and asked Anantacharya, can you please tell me who is the Vaishnava? Anantacharya said, come tomorrow, I'll tell you. Like this, for 1 week, every day, he told him, come tomorrow. Now imagine, if this person had a social media account at that point, what he would have done, he would have probably tweeted, keeping all the Vaishnavas in CC, tagged, saying that this is what is happening to me and all that. This person just didn't retaliate. After 1 week of all this kind of, dealings, finally, last time he goes to ask Anantacharya, can you please tell me who is a Vaishnava? Anantacharya says, a Vaishnava is like a hen, a Vaishnava is like a crane, a Vaishnava is like salt, and a Vaishnava is like you. That's all. And he went away. Now this guy, this fellow is wondering, what is the meaning of this? Such a strange answer to who a Vaishnava is. And this person asked Anantacharya, can you please elaborate what this means? He said, go and ask Parashar Bhatta who sent you here. And this man was like really confused. What is going on? He went all the way back from Tirupati to Srirangam and he met Parashar Bhatta. And he asked him, and he told him the whole thing, whatever happened, And he said, this is what happened to me. Can you please tell me what these four words mean? Vaishnava is like a hen, Vaishnava is like a crane, Vaishnava is like a salt, and Vaishnava is like me. So Parashar Bhatta said, wow, what a profound answer this is. This is the best answer on who a Vaishnava is ever possible. And this man was not understanding anything. And then Parashar Bhatta explained. He said, a Vaishnava is someone who is like a hen. What does a hen do? The interesting thing about a hen is, you'll find hens are pecking, grains on the ground all the time. You will never see a grain, but the hen will see. Isn't it? There is unlimited dirt on the ground, but the hen knows how to pick those grains, basically. So Vaishnava is like a hen, which means there might be a lot of dirt around you, but a Vaishnava knows how to pick those grains. What does it mean? Each and every one of us, we are a combination of some good qualities and a lot of bad qualities, isn't it? There was once a very famous gold miner who was asked this question, what is the secret of your success? And this man said, the secret of my success is that when I dig for gold, I don't look for dirt. Because when you look for dirt, you'll get lots. In gold mines, there are heaps and heaps of dirt. There's a small gram of gold, basically. So that's how Vaishnava is. Vaishnava is someone who knows to distill the essence. That means who knows how to look for good qualities in the other person and filter out all the bad qualities. Not focus on all the bad qualities that a person might have. Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was in one of the Gaudiya Mutts. And there was a cook who was a cook in that Gaudiya Mutt who died. And all the devotees, all the brahmacharis over there, sannyasis and brahmacharis, they were celebrating, they were having a festival. This fellow died. So Bhaktisiddhanta said, what is this? Why are you celebrating? They said, this man tortured us so much. Imagine if a cook decides to torture someone. They can royally torture you, isn't it? Yeah. So Bhaktisiddhanta heard this, that this cook really disturbed all these devotees. Bhaktisiddhanta said, see, is there anything good in this person? They said, no, nothing good at all. Absolutely nothing good in him. Bhaktisiddhanta said, I want all of you to think of at least one good quality this person had. They had to really break their heads. They thought a lot. And finally they said, one good thing he had was that his clothes were spotlessly clean. Bhaktisiddhanta said, see, at least he had one good quality. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, think more. So like this, he pushed them to think and they had actually a list of different qualities that he had, which most of the time we overlook in the heaps of dirt in a person's life. So similarly, a Vaishnava, someone is like a hen who looks for that good quality in a person and picks up only that good quality. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his dealings with so many of the devotees, if you look at the way Mahaprabhu lived his life and the way he had dealings, he picked up the essence of every devotee. He picked up the essence of the best qualities in every devotee. Like for example, there was a devotee called Sridhar Kolavich, and he was a banana seller. And Mahaprabhu, he once went and told Sridhar Kolavich, "You are hiding something from this world, and I'm going to expose you." Sridhar Kolavich is saying, "There's nothing that I have to hide." You know, he had only a small thatched hut which had more holes than roof. He had one piece of cloth that had more holes tied together than actual cloth, you know. And he hardly had anything. And Mahaprabhu was telling him, "You are a very rich person. You are hiding your richness from the world, you know." And then during the Mahaprakash Leela, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought, he told the devotees, "Bring Sridhar." And the devotees had not even heard the name Sridhar. He didn't exist for them. But for Mahaprabhu, he existed. Because this person had one quality that Mahaprabhu found it so endearing. What is the quality that he had? His simplicity. And that simplicity of Sridhar really touched Mahaprabhu's heart. And Sridhar, when Sridhar was brought, Mahaprabhu, he said, "You are a very rich man." And what is the richness he's talking about? He's not talking about wealth. He's not talking about bank balance. He's not talking about how many credit cards he has. And you know, what is he talking about is essentially the state of his heart. The simplicity that was in his heart. And that simplicity is what attracted Mahaprabhu. So Parashar Bhatta says, you know, Vaishnava is like hen, which means he knows to pick grains from lot of dirt. And then he said, Vaishnava is like a crane. What is the meaning of Vaishnava is like a crane? A crane, if you see, it is standing on one leg and its eyes are closed. Its head is held up in the air and it is in a trance. A lot of people think that the crane is meditating, you know. But the crane is meditating on the fish below. It is meditating, but not on something higher, but it is meditating on something lower, you know. And the interesting thing about the crane is that the crane, so there are, below the crane, there are hundreds of fishes passing one after another, one after another, one after another. The crane doesn't put its head down when these small little fishes pass. Allows them to pass. The medium-sized fishes, he allows them to pass. The little average-sized fishes, he allows them to pass. And then when a big fish comes, zoop, the crane goes in and comes out. And in that one moment, he has caught the biggest catch of the day. And that one fish is enough for him for the day. Parashar Bhatta says, a Vaishnava is like this crane. He is very selective in whom he associates with. In our life, we will find many, many fishes coming and going in our life, you know. I mean, swarms of people coming and walking and walking out of our lives. A Vaishnava is someone who knows whom to associate with. A Vaishnava is someone who is very selective in his association. It doesn't mean that a Vaishnava doesn't associate with all Vaishnavas. He associates with every Vaishnava. But in terms of really connecting heart to heart, Vaishnava is very selective. Rupa Goswami, he in the Nectar of Instruction, he uses this word Swajatiya Vaishnava. Now, what is the meaning of Swajatiya Vaishnava? In Vaishnava relationships and in Vaishnava societies, we don't look at jati, which is jati means caste or external creed, etc. But why is Rupa Goswami using this word Swajatiya Vaishnava? He's specifically referring to a term which is known as like-mindedness. So in a Vaishnava Sangha, there are hundreds and thousands of Vaishnavas. We can't connect with everybody. You can't have deep soul-searching conversations with everybody. We cannot resonate with everybody's mood. It is not possible. But every one of us will resonate with somebody's mood. And that somebody that you select, whom you want to really connect with on a deep level, has to be chosen very carefully. And therefore, here, Parashar Bhatta is saying, Vaishnava is like a crane. He makes very careful choices of whom he wants to associate with. What is the meaning of association? Association is not just hanging around eating prasad together. Association is not just coming and doing hari bol dancing together. That's all very important part of association. But in this context, association is about deep, heartfelt connections. Very powerful heartfelt connections. And these powerful heartfelt connections are very important for us to develop in our lives. I'll tell you a very interesting story from the Panchatantra. And after that, I'll tell you why I'm telling you this story. Otherwise, you might think that suddenly I've got into a children, class mood, So once there was a crocodile, once there was a monkey. And the name of this monkey was Raktamukha. And this monkey was staying on a tree. And this tree was a berry tree. And this monkey was eating berries all day long. He loved the taste of those berries. He lived on the tree and enjoyed his life. One day, a crocodile whose name was Karalamukha happened to come by, parked himself under the tree. And this monkey thought, he's a guest in my house. Maybe I should feed him some berries. So from top of the tree, he dropped some berries into the crocodile's mouth. The crocodile loved the berries. And he told the monkey, can I have some more? The monkey dropped a little more. And little by little, the crocodile and the monkey began to talk. They started speaking about their lives. They started speaking about their investments. They started speaking about, how is business going on. They started speaking about their relationships. They had a lot of discussions and they were eating berries. And while they were doing this, one day, the crocodile's wife, she had a suspicion that this guy is missing, for long hours. So she asked the crocodile, where do you go? You disappear all day. The crocodile told his wife, I found a new friend, this monkey who feeds me berries. And the crocodile got for her some berries. She ate the berries. She loved the taste. But she had a very strange thought. Human perceptions are very strange always, So what you understand from things. So the crocodile bought the berries thinking that she'll be so happy that, he has found a nice friend and he has found berries and eating nice. So this lady, the crocodile wife, she ate the berries and she said, this monkey is eating berries, such sweet berries all day long. How sweet must be his heart? I want to eat his heart. The crocodile said, come on, you don't eat friends. The wife gave the ultimate, warning. She said, if you love me, you should get his heart, And then after that, he had no option. So he went to the monkey and he told the monkey, see, we all talk every day. Why don't we go for a joyride today? So you hop on my back and I'll take you inside the river. We'll have a joyride. So the monkey innocently jumped on the crocodile's back. They reached the middle of the river. And the crocodile told the monkey, see, this is not a joyride. This is your last ride. My wife wants to eat your heart. I'm so sorry. I can't do anything about it. The monkey immediately realized he's in big trouble. And instantly the monkey said, oh no. You should have told me. I left my heart on the tree. And the crocodile was sweating in the middle of the river, It's not easy to... So he knew his wife is going to be very angry because she was very specific. I want to eat the monkey's heart. So the crocodile was tense. The monkey said, don't worry. Let's just go back to the tree. We'll get my heart back and then we'll go home. The crocodile said, yes, yes. And he went back. The monkey jumped on the top of the tree. And from top of the tree, the monkey quoted a shloka, Sanskrit shloka, to the crocodile. And you know what the shloka is? Dadati pratigrinati guyam akhyati prichati bungte bojayate chaiva shadvida priti lakshadam. If for all those of you who are doing Bhakti Shastri and studying NOI and all that, this verse is from Panchatantra. And this verse is spoken by the monkey to the crocodile. And Rupa Goswami picked it up from Panchatantra and put it in Nectar of Instructions, And this monkey is telling the crocodile, What it means to be a Sujatiya Vaishnav. The monkey is telling the crocodile, he said, you fool, can I leave my heart on the tree? If I leave my heart on the tree, I'll die. But what do I mean that I kept my heart on the tree? You keep your heart where your heart feels safe, isn't it? Like typically when you go to an office, when people go to work, you don't carry your heart to work, do you? Monday to Friday you work, and then on a Friday evening, how do you feel? You feel excited, happy, isn't it? And Monday morning, how do you feel? Miserable, isn't it? Why? Your heart is at home. And you go to work without your heart, come back after that, So here the monkey is telling the crocodile, I left my heart on the tree means the tree is the place where I feel safe. I don't feel safe with you. my heart is not going to be anymore with you. Similarly, when we associate with devotees, we have to know which are the devotees that we really connect heart to heart with. And these Vaishnava connections, these heart-to-heart connections, based on deeper thought processes, deeper understanding of life, deeper likes and dislikes, is what makes these connections so beautiful. So each and every one of us should be like the screen, very choosy in whom we want to associate with. We can associate with all the Vaishnavas possible in this world, but with a few Vaishnavas, you should have a real deep heart-to-heart connection. And those deep heart-to-heart friendships and heart-to-heart connections is what will make the process of bhakti even more beautiful. And this also refers to Parashar Bhatta also saying how one should be careful not to associate with certain type of people who may not have the deepest understandings of spirituality, deepest practices of spirituality. That's what it means to be a crane. Then Parashar Bhatta. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastimes, if you see, Mahaprabhu also is very careful whom to associate with and whom not to associate with. You know, when his servant, Kalakrishna, he went and started associating with the Bhattaharis. Mahaprabhu caught his hair and pulled him back. Which means Mahaprabhu is trying to teach us that be careful whom you associate with and whom you don't associate with. And be careful what is the quality of your association. Because that's why Mahaprabhu made such a powerful Sangha of devotees. Very carefully chosen Sangha of devotees. So if you look at Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu didn't make everyone his disciple. Though obviously he hugged everyone and made them devotees like that. But his disciples were very chosen, very, very selected. And because he knew that these are the quality of people that I want to become leaders to propagate Krishna consciousness in the world too. And Mahaprabhu associated a lot with these selected set of devotees. And through his dealings, he's also teaching us that yes, we should do Janakalyan, we should do preaching to hundreds and thousands of people, but we should be selective in whom we want to associate with. We should be having, you know, Mahaprabhu's inner group. Not everybody is allowed to be a part of that inner group, isn't it? Why? Because that's the whole principle behind being choosy about whom you want to really go deeper with. And then, Parashar Bhatta, he says, a Vaishnava should be like salt. What is the meaning of that? The interesting part about salt is that when it is too less and too much, that's when you notice it. When it is perfect, you don't care about it. You don't even notice it. Have you ever told the cooks, salt is perfect today? You know, I don't think any child will go and tell his mother, salt is perfect today, you know. I don't think any husband will go and tell his wife, salt is perfect today. I don't think you will go to a restaurant where you ate the best food ever and you tell the chef, salt is perfect today. Thank you for putting perfect salt. You know? When salt is perfect, you don't care about it. You don't think about it. You don't even remember the salt exists. But when the salt is a little more and the salt is a little less, you immediately remember salt. Isn't it? A Vaishnava is like salt, which means that he is very much a part of your life. He adds sweetness to your life. He adds taste to your life. But he is not too much present on your face. He's there and yet he's not there. The moment you meet a genuine devotee in your life, the taste of your life changes completely. Each and every one of us, we have all experienced association with genuine devotees. And the moment you meet a genuine Vaishnava in your life, the taste of your life changes completely. And the interesting part is that the devotee will never claim that, see, after you met me, what happened to your life? How beautiful your life has become, you know? Most of the times the devotees preach to us and they are gone. They are preaching to many other people and they have changed our life completely forever. But they don't claim it, isn't it? And if you go today to all these, you know, people who are, building, businesses and building, you know, helping people develop their business and all. One person becomes a millionaire because of them. Oh my God, how many, you know, advertisements they do putting his photo. See, this fellow became a millionaire because of me, you know. How many people they'll keep telling, you know, that see what I've done to this person, how I've transformed this person. There are so many Vaishnavas who have transformed hundreds of devotees' lives. They don't even talk about it. They don't even bother about it. They don't want to keep on keeping account of how many lives I have transformed and how many people became devotee because of me. They just don't care. They're just going ahead and transforming thousands of lives. This is a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is a person, when he's present in your life, he adds a lot of taste in your life. He makes your life so much better. He makes your life so much more meaningful. And he adds so much of flavor in your life. The only time that you see a Vaishnava, you realize, you know, that how much a Vaishnava has affected your life is when they're gone. That's when we really realize how much this person has affected my life, has touched my life. Otherwise, when they are there, we just, you know, they are unassuming. They're just totally unassuming. And we also kind of take them for granted, the way we take salt for granted, you know. So at least once in a while, whenever we hear a class like this, at least, we should become, we should remember to be grateful to those devotees who have instrumental in adding taste in our lives, adding Krishna into our life and making our life so meaningful and so beautiful. Harashar Bhatta is reminding us that a Vaishnava is like salt. They add so much meaning and value to our lives. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his dealings with his devotees, if you look at every single devotee that Mahaprabhu dealt with, there is a particular flavor, you know, which really makes these dealings so much more beautiful and so much more sweet. So Mahaprabhu, the way he dealt with his devotees, every single devotee had a particular memory of him, you know, and the way Mahaprabhu dealt with in their lives. And every single devotee who associated with Mahaprabhu, there was a particular flavor. Like, you know, there was one particular devotee who was brother of Shivananda Sen. And one time, there was this yatra that going from Jagannath Puri to, from Bengal to Puri. There was a particular dog who was accompanying, you know, Shivananda Sen in his yatra. And Shivananda Sen was feeding this dog. Just like he's feeding all other devotees, feeding this dog also. So at some point of time, you know, Shivananda Sen lost this dog. So there was a lot of disturbance of where this dog has gone and all that. And also there was some tax tolls that had to be paid. Very complicated affair at that point. So Shivananda Sen's prasad arrangements one particular day got late. And Nityananda Prabhu was very, very upset with delay. So there are some devotees who are very, very particular of eating at a particular time, and you know. So here, and especially in yatras, you know, when you're managing big yatras, a lot of people, it's impossible to satisfy everyone. Impossible, you know. They will, anybody who is managing yatras have to be ready to eat a lot of bad words, you know, and have to be ready to for a lot of anger and a lot of frustration and all that. So Shivananda Sen was calm. Nityananda Prabhu, he got so upset, he kicked him on his chest. I don't know if any yatra managers have to deal with that, you know. Fortunately, you know, nobody at the level of Nityananda Prabhu in these yatras that we take, at least, you know. And Shivananda Sen, when he was kicked on his chest by Nityananda Prabhu, he, you know, obviously he was bewildered, but he knew that he made a mistake, you know, and he had to serve the Lord. He ran and made arrangements. But he had a relative who was very disturbed seeing this. He got so disturbed, he left the yatra and went directly to Puri. And his name was Shrikanta Sen. And he went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, because a lot of anger and a lot of frustration. So as soon as he came into Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, you know, Gambira, Govinda, who was Mahaprabhu's servant, he saw this man walking in. In those days, the etiquette was that when you come in front of the Lord, when you come in front of somebody very superior, you would wear a cloth around your neck. The cloth around your neck shows that you are humble. Nowadays, people wear a cloth around their neck, tie, that shows that some kind of arrogance is there, you know. So in those days, the cloth around the neck like this was the sign of humility. So this guy entered the Gambira, but he didn't wear the cloth because he was too disturbed, you know. Govinda is going to him and telling him, hey, wear your cloth around your neck. Mahaprabhu calls Govinda. He says, please, don't give him instructions. Somebody who has a disturbed mind does not need advice. They need hope. So now, imagine if Mahaprabhu doesn't understand the sensitivity of devotees, the finer dealings of devotees, how would he be able to connect with so many amazing devotees in such deep ways? And the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is meant for this. It is meant to teach us deeper dealings between Vaishnavas, deeper dealings. So when we are dealing with people who are in a very sensitive, very disturbed situation of life, let's remember this pastime. Let us not go and start giving them advice. Because all of us, we are experts in giving advice. Especially advice that is not sought for, you know. So whenever we come to a situation where we know somebody is in trouble, somebody is in anxiety, somebody is in pain, unless and until they ask you for it, don't give advice unnecessarily. And how do you deal with somebody who is in pain, somebody who is in anxiety, somebody who is in stress? The only thing that we need to do to deal with them is act in such a way that they feel hopeful, that they feel hope in their lives. And that's the best dealings that you can have with devotees. So in the Shivaishnava Sampradaya, we find that Ramanujacharya, with all his Vaishnavas, the way he dealt with all of them, and also the way the Vaishnavas dealt with each other, was so amazing and so sensitive. And it was so much filled with these deeper Vaishnava principles that we see embedded all over the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So here Parashar Bhatta is telling this devotee that a Vaishnava should be like a hen. That means pick up the most essence, you know, leave out all the dirt and not focus on all the dirt. A Vaishnava should be like a crane. That means focus on associating with the, you know, Swajatiya Vaishnavas, the Vaishnavas that you can really deeply connect with and get so much of nectar from. And then he speaks about Vaishnava being like salt, which means unassuming, present in everybody's life, adding taste in everybody's life, but at the same time, not demanding for attention. And finally, Parashar Bhatta concludes this whole story by telling, Vaishnava is like you. What is the meaning of that? That means, this person was tested so many times by Anantacharya. 7 days not fed on time, 7 days just made to wait, and after that also being given a strange instruction. After all that kind of bad dealings, this Vaishnava didn't get angry. He didn't retaliate. He was very tolerant, very calm, very peaceful, and in a very humble spirit. That's what a Vaishnava is. So Parashar Bhatta saying, Vaishnava is like you. That means the way you lived your life in these few days and the way you dealt with Anantacharya, that's the way Vaishnava should deal. So even if somebody is treating you badly, don't retaliate. Don't get upset and angry. And it's okay. It's a part of your purification. You know? Ramanujacharya, who was the head of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, when he became the head of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, at that time there was one devotee who was very envious of him. And this devotee, he actually thought he's going to be the next head after Ramanujacharya. But instead of making him the head, they made Ramanujacharya the head. So this devotee really got upset. In fact, he went to Ramanujacharya's house. He invited Ramanujacharya for lunch to his house. And he mixed poison in his food to serve Ramanujacharya. Imagine, you know, envy can go to any extent. And a person who's envious can go to any extent. It's not about whether you're a devotee or not a devotee. The nature of envy is destructive, basically. So Ramanujacharya, he went to the devotee's house, and that devotee was not there at that point. And his wife told Ramanujacharya, don't eat any food, this is poisoned. Ramanujacharya ran away from there. The next day, Ramanujacharya went to the Srirangam temple to have prasad. When he extended his hand to accept Charanamrit, this pujari, he mixed poison in Charanamrit. Can you imagine, of all things in the world, you know? And his hand was shivering while giving Charanamrit to Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya took the Charanamrit, drank it. And this man, he thought, now Ramanujacharya is finished. And then Ramanujacharya walked away from after having darshan. In his body, all the ecstatic symptoms were manifesting. Ashtavikar, sweating and trembling of his body. So this person, the pujari, thought that this is like symptoms of poison, you know, that he'll die now, you know. And Ramanujacharya was experiencing the highest level of ecstasy. And when this man realized that the poison didn't affect him, this man came and fell at the feet of Ramanujacharya and surrendered his life to him. And he became Ramanujacharya's disciple. And the interesting thing is that Ramanujacharya never in his entire life ever brought this up. And never in his entire life ever doubted him again. And Ramanujacharya, he knew that this Charanamrita has poison. Because he could see the symptoms. But he still accepted it. That means a Vaishnava is someone who knows that in this world, we'll be dealing with a lot of envious people. will be dealing with a lot of people with anarthas in them. But a Vaishnava knows that each and every one of us are in the process of purification. Someday we'll be rid of the anarthas. Till then, what do you do? Tolerate. And that's why Mahaprabhu, in the essence of his Chaitanya Charitamrita, is these three things. Srinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishrunam, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. శ్రీ చైతన్య చరితామృత్ కి శిల ప్రభుపాద కి అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ వృంద కి